If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muchen, and I am in for Steve Bertrand, who is on the mend. There's a rumor going around. I think he might come back. I know it's been hard, Steve, to be out and listening to me, but hopefully you're, you know, on the mend and will call in, because I've been poking you all over social media today hoping for a surprise call. So we've got a lot going on today, and it's Monday. So we have the guys from Chicago Inno, Jim Dahlke and Will Flanagan. Lots of good stuff today. I want to start, though, with Eric Lefkowski, who, as we know, was one of the Groupon founders, kind of a low-key guy, right? You don't always know. He's not always out there on the big stages, but it turns out he's up to something that could be kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely low-key, but definitely has his hand in a lot of different companies. Always seems to, he's definitely a serial entrepreneur in Chicago. And over at ChicagoInno.com, on Friday, we cover the news of his latest venture, which is Tempus Labs. A really interesting company that's around curing cancer. And it says it's building the infrastructure to modernize cancer treatment, doing some really fascinating stuff around analyzing patients' genetic code to sort of create personalized treatment plans, making someone's care a lot smarter and a lot more customized to the cancer patient.
Right. I always just wonder when people say curing cancer, like that's a pretty big ambition, right? But it seems that the genetic code piece is really the piece that they're banking on, right?
Yes. It's a very data heavy look at looking at a huge huge sections of genetic code, starting, trying to make sure that they can tailor someone's treatment versus everyone else's genetic code. So really taking a big look and a big swing at a really big problem across the world. And we were the first to kind of report this story over the weekend. And it's really an interesting look at the next venture for one of Chicago's most important entrepreneurs.
Yeah, and his business partner, Brad Keywell, who's the founder of Uptake, which is one of Chicago's latest unicorns. It's doing big data for machines. And it's kind of interesting to view Tempus and Uptake through a similar lens.
Interesting.
Where they're taking big, big analytics and applying it to an industry that maybe hasn't seen this yet. So whereas Brad's, you know, tackling big machines and kind of construction, Eric is going after cancer. So they're almost like cousins in a way,
right?
Which is, you know, almost expected, right?
Right.
You would see these guys taking these huge moonshot swings at great industries.
And you guys, I have to ask, when you break a story, so how does that happen? How do you find this stuff out?
Well, you know what's interesting about this one is, you know, when you traditionally get a scoop, it's like you're digging up 1,000 different things. These guys had a website. There's like a bunch of videos on YouTube.
Right.
It's almost one of those things where
hidden in plain sight.
When we learned about it,
yeah,
the person who we learned it from them, everybody was surprised it took the media this long, just because it's like, oh, yeah, Tempus is, they've been working on this for quite a while, you guys.
Yeah.
So for us, this one was really right place, right time. And then the fact that all of this information was available, like waiting to be discovered.
That's cool. And do you think they're purposely staying under the radar? I mean, is Eric going to call you today? Because he's listening, no doubt.
You know, Brad Keywell did sort of the similar thing with Uptake. Uptake sort of came out of nowhere. They were very much working in stealth mode until they raised a bunch of money and were
right,
very public. They kind of very much came out of nowhere. And Tempus appears to be sort of doing something similar.
It's cool. It's great to know. So, you know, not quite curing cancer, but you guys are also going to bring us today Bait. Let's just emphasize again and underline, not exactly curing cancer. I'm fascinated by this one, but also troubled. So tell us about Bait.
Yeah, Bait is a sports gambling app, but they're doing it a lot differently than you would gamble on sports typically. So basically what they do is they offer an app where you can see all the lines from Vegas. So you can see the betting lines, the over-under, and you can it syncs with your contacts on your phone. So Will and I can go head-to-head on if the Bears are going to win their first game of the season, and the payout happens over Venmo. So when I lose the bet, I get directed to Will's Venmo page, and I pay up
and
through
Venmo. This is legal, so can you just break it down for us? What would make this legal versus illegal?
So according to Bait, they get around some of the fishy things with betting, in the sense that there's no one's holding the flame to no one's requiring you to bet. right? So you don't have to pay up. The bet is there. It's up to you to sort of make good on your bet. So nothing is going to be deducted from an account. Bait is not taking your payment information. It's not collecting money off of the gamble. Basically, it is a friendly bet between friends, and you have to sort of actively pay up.
Yeah, it's streamlining the water cooler bet. Hey, man, $5 on tonight's game. It's putting that online. So this is already happening on Facebook and Twitter where you're seeing people like, oh, I'll take 10, I'll take 20. This is just, it's completely hands-off, which is why it's legal. It's just the middleman. However, it's operating on like the honor code, which right, doesn't really exist right. on the internet. So,
right.
you know, I don't have to pay Jim if I lose.
See, so this is, let me just tell you, and actually, so my dad's going to be on later today, Arthur Mushin. He's the guest of the Ask Arthur section segment on our podcast. He's also an employment lawyer. He, which has nothing to do with what I'm about to tell you, other than to say he regularly bets with my children, his grandchildren, and then expects them to pay up, which yeah. I always find troubling. He says they should learn. You know, they made a bet. They need to follow through. I am terrified that this app will now take over our lives. I mean, going to somebody's Venmo account is no small thing, but they can't just take the money out.
No, you have to request it, right? And so the person who loses the bet, or the person who wins, yeah, the person who loses the bet has to give up the money. So, I mean, it's a very active action. Yeah. You can't, and nothing is taken from your account without you having to actually go ahead and make that move.
And if you're like me, and if you scroll through your Venmo account anyway, you see the history. All of my friends are exchanging money for this anyway. You'll see, like, the explanation for the transaction will just be like, Blackhawk's L. So this is already happening. This just makes it easier.
It's basically providing a tech platform behind the person-to-person friendly wager, yeah.
Well, it's huge and going to be really good for Venmo, right?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you'd have to imagine that that's because, again, because they're not actually exchanging any money. The other question is, so how's Bait going to make money?
Right.
So, you know, the hope is...
How are they?
Ads.
Ads? Really?
Hopefully, you know, you become valuable to Venmo and you can prove the acquisition.
Bait's playing the user game, yeah. So they're so that's how they get around being illegal, is that they're not taking any money from the transaction. So
they're just facilitating it.
They're facilitating it, so they're going to try to get as many users as possible and be ad generated.
Okay, well, I don't know how to feel about it. Part of me says it'll make fun betting just, you know, a little bit, have a little edge to it. On the other hand, I can see it causing real problems among friends. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe you don't pay up well.
Exactly, right? If it's bringing new people and new users into this world, that's when you might run into trouble. But, you know, friends are making bets every day right now.
Exactly.
I think Jim and I have a bet on who talks most today.
Oh, wait, really? You should have told me ahead of time, and somebody, I could have maybe, you know, done a little insider.
No, that's
if you don't pay up, though, you do get rated, just like your Uber driver gets rated.
Oh,
so
nice.
if you continue to not pay up in the app, you will get a low rating.
Okay, well, in order to make sure that Will gets just enough time, and we are going to keep these guys after the break and are going to be talking about the 100 coolest companies nominees. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Mushin hosting in for Steve Bertrand, and we have Jim Dahlke and Will Flanagan from Chicago Inno. We've already been talking about some cool apps and stuff, but speaking of cool, you guys have this contest, right? The Chicago's coolest companies. So how does it work? First of all, how do I become, or individuals able to apply?
Yes, we take anyone and everyone. Really, you know, cool is such a big, broad word, and how we define it is if you like working for your company, if you love working for your company, like, please let us know. And if that's a two-person startup, or, you know, if you're at, you know, Zebra Technologies or GoGo or Grubhub, like, tell us why you like working at your business. And one of the reasons we do this and we release the 100 finalists is because that the reasons you get are all over the place. You know, you don't get 100. We have ping pong, or we have kegs.
Although a lot of them seem to have ping pong.
You get a lot of ping pong kegs. You get a lot of unlimited vacation days. You start to realize that these perks that companies have to kind of be different and set themselves apart from the crowd, everyone's doing now. So the perks that I really find interesting are the ones that are totally unique to the company. I love these, the ones we read about, like internal talk series, and a lot of the emphasis on on bettering, you know, your education in-house. A lot of those are ones that kind of stuck out to me. Datascope Analytics was a company that submitted that their submission just kind of screamed out to me, because what they do is that they do, kind of speaking of bait, like in-company betting on just arguments they have, and they allocate time to kind of solving these arguments. And I think that's the kind of stuff when you talk about culture, it's not we have unlimited vacation days. It's I love doing this next to the guy, next to the person sitting next to me, and really cultivating this culture that you can't like put a word on is really what we're looking for.
And this is how many years have you guys been doing this now?
This is our second year.
Okay. And when you guys are making the decision, or a team?
So a team, we're doing it all internal. We have a group of advisors. We have people who help us judge for our 50 on Fire awards, which we do in December. We also now have last year's winners, who we send way too many pages of submissions and say, good luck. Yeah. And we also, of the 10 finalists, two of them are Reader's Choice. So we have all the submissions online. You can read through them and tell us who you think has the coolest company. And those two winners will be announced live at Chicago Fest, which is our event in August.
And what do you feel jumps out? I mean, as you said, some of the perks that, you know, seem at this moment kind of ubiquitous. And I love the speaking series and all of that. But what are the more sort of heartfelt things people are saying?
Well, a lot of companies will do, impact initiatives where they do giving, volunteering, things along those lines. I mean, that kind of stuff like really stands out as far as companies that are not just willing to give people, free beer and unlimited vacation, but really kind of give back to the community. We see a lot of that.
That was a real surprise. We actually talked about that in office, how it was really cool to see a lot of the reasons why people were saying their company's cool is for these charitable initiatives, whether it's giving them a day to volunteer, or our company partners with this charity and we are volunteering with this organization, you know, once a month. We saw that a lot, and that was like really encouraging. You know, you expect to see the free candy, the free lunches, but to see that I like working for my company because, you know, we work with Girls Who Code, or we're doing this organization, was really kind of a neat thing. And I think that's one of the reasons why, if you go through those 100 submissions, you'll see a lot of kind of charitable shout outs.
I think that's the trend, right? Yeah. Especially with the millennials, they are saying loud and clear that what matters to them is feeling that their work has meaning and feeling that their company has a very explicit and understandable mission.
Yeah, we were just looking at a survey the other day that said salary was like number 3 or 4 in top list of priorities for things for employees looking for their line of work.
Yeah, and the other thing is, because we cover tech and startups, another thing you see over and over again is like all of these perks are great, but a lot of times these people are just so passionate about their product.
Right.
And they could be, most of them are on a couch or in a, they don't care. They love working with their company for their product. And again, that's why we like doing this list, because there are 1,000 reasons why you may think your company is cool. We want to hear about all of them.
That's so awesome. Well, speaking of cool companies and making a difference, so there is a high school student. Actually, we had another high school student last week we talked about, right, who was doing the breast cancer identification, Lane Tech high school student. Here's another one. Tell us about SLAPT.
Yeah, SLAPT stands for Surviving Life After a Parent Dies. And this is a company, a social network, really, developed by a high school student here in Chicago who lost her father when she was just 13 years old. He died in a tragic drowning accident, actually saving two small children. So what she did was she found that it was really difficult to cope. And she found that when she met other kids her age who had gone through something similar, that it was a lot better. So she decided to create a social network called SLAPT that is around bringing all of these kids together who can kind of talk about their shared experience and to kind of grieve together.
And how do people find it if they're hearing about it? Do we know?
Yes, you can. They have an Indiegogo page right now where they are raising money. So check out Indiegogo, and they are raising money to sort of redesign the website, add some new features. Their campaign is thinking to raise around $30,000 to kind of really go all in on the social network platform.
Okay, Jim Dahlke, Will Flanagan, Chicago Inno. Great stuff, you guys. Thanks so much. We'll be back after this commercial break.
Talking baseball, Klazuski, Campanella, talking baseball, the man and Bobby Feller, the scooter.
Welcome. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Suzanne Musion, in for Steve Bertrand. And as you can hear, we're about to talk baseball. I feel like my sons would be super proud of me. We have Mike Tackett, who's joining us. He's a journalist from the New York Times, Washington Bureau, and importantly, he's the author of The Baseball Whisper, a small-town coach who shaped big league dreams. Mike, welcome to the show.
Suzanne, thanks. Good to be here.
Well, I'm excited to talk baseball. I actually am, even though I think some of the boys in my household might be chuckling a little bit. But tell me about how you came upon this story, because I would imagine as a journalist, you come upon stories all the time. How did you know this one was going to make a great book?
Well, it really started with our son, who ended up playing a summer in Clarinda, Iowa, and he was sort of looking for a second chance, for an opportunity to restart his baseball career. So he left from the East and drove 20 hours to Clarinda, Iowa, a kid that had grown up in metropolitan D.C., and was in rural America for the first time, really, and just found himself dropped into a very special world that he didn't know was that special when he got there. And then when we went out there to watch them play, we could see it too, just a real genuineness of people, something about small-town America that we think kind of lives in myth, but yet was real in this case, where families would open their arms and their hearts to these players. They would come out and stay with them all for free. They'd look after them as surrogate parents, prepare meals for them, drive them to the game.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just wonderful.
And so this is, you know, all of us who grew up with Field of Dreams, but this is in that genre of a story of this legendary coach. So tell us a little bit about Merle Eberle, who's the subject of your book.
He starts out born in rural Iowa during the Depression, and his parents ended up getting divorced. So he was in a broken home and was really rudderless in life. He was living in Omaha, Nebraska, had dropped out of high school, you know, had taken on many bad habits. And finally, his mother said, you need to go live with your grandparents back in Clarinda. So he goes back to Clarinda, still not doing all that well, but then encounters a coach at the high school, a coach named John Tidor, who had been a famous World War II veteran and the University of Iowa's football coach. And he confronted Merle in a way that really challenged him, but also was exactly what he was looking for, somebody who would take an interest in him. He enrolls back in school, becomes a star athlete, and then realizes the power that a coach can have in a player's life.
And I think any of us as parents or anyone listening who's experienced that, you know the power of that relationship. It's not just on the field, but it really can be a life-changing relationship.
That's exactly right, Suzanne, and that was really what Merle Eberle wanted to do. He wanted to teach beyond baseball. He wanted his impact to go beyond baseball. Baseball was, of course, at its foundation, but he thought it went well beyond that.
And what do you mean by a baseball whisper? I think we've heard this term before. There's the dog whisperer, the horse whisperer. But what does it mean? Why did you use that term?
In his particular case, it's because his was kind of a whispered sort of fame in that he was known in the world of collegiate baseball coaches. He was known in the world of college players. But he wasn't somebody who was on ESPN. He wasn't somebody who was featured in the Chicago Tribune or the New York Times. And so it was a kind of acclaim and renown that was quiet and yet widespread.
And in this book, if we're reading it and learning about how he approached this relationship with his players, are there takeaways that we can all apply, whether or not we're a coach or maybe even just a parent?
Part of it is the idea of honoring the sport, honoring the way that you play. One of the things he would say to his players, as simple as it sounds, he would say, it's 90 feet. And by that he meant run the ball out,
right,
only 90 feet from home to first. And Vaughn Hayes, who went on to a really well-regarded major league career, said that even when he was playing for the Philadelphia Phillies, if he hit a ball and didn't run it out, he would hear that voice in his head saying 90 feet.
That's awesome. And it sounds like there's also a very well-known player who was one of Eberle's subjects, right? One of his coachees.
Right. And this is really, I think this story kind of tells the larger story. This is about Ozzie Smith, who played for the St. Louis Cardinals as a Baseball Hall of Fame member. when Ozzie Smith was in college, he was really not much of a prospect. His coach met Merle Eberle at a college coaches convention, and he said, I want to send you a young shortstop. So he comes to Iowa, and he, on the first day of practice, Merle doesn't think he'll be good enough to play there. He's 140 pounds, wow. 5'10".
Yeah.
So he hits him about 100 ground balls. He doesn't miss a single one. Finally, he looks up and says, Coach, don't you realize you can't get one past me? So he plays there that summer and really begins to flourish, really wow. begins to find his talent. He gets drafted then the next year in professional baseball, but instead chooses to come back to Clarinda, Iowa to play again for Merle Eberle.
That's
and then he
amazing.
Signs the next year and goes yeah. on to this great career.
I think this also feels, given the moment that we're in with, you know, all of the negativity and what's going on in politics, it just feels like getting back to the kind of basics of America by telling a story like this.
I think it's really pleasant counter-programming.
Right.
So given everything else that's going on.
So where can people buy the book? It's out, right?
Yes, it is. Amazon is an easy place to buy it. It's also available at Barnes & Noble and a lot of other bookstores, and you can buy it directly from Houghton Mifflin, the publisher.
And how long did it take you? I'm just curious, because sometimes you think that writers just sit down and a book kind of just writes itself, and I know that's not the case. How long does writing something like this take?
It took over a year, and then a lot of revisions and a lot of back and forth and a lot of double checking, but it was truly a labor of love. I was honored to be able to do it.
It sounds like it. Mike Tackett, he's the author of The Baseball Whisper, a small-town coach who shaped big league dreams. Mike, thanks so much for being with us and telling us about your book.
No, thank you, Suzanne. Always great to be on WGN.
Great. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Buchan. I'm standing in for Steve Burton. I'm actually sitting in for him. Steve is on the mend, and I believe he'll be back next week. But in the meantime, in the studio, we have Arthur Buchan. We share a last name because he's my dad. He's an employment attorney at Laner Buchan and the star. I've made you famous.
He's There's no question about it.
Famous.
Absolutely. Rich and famous.
He is the star of the Ask Arthur segment on the Big Payoff podcast. And, Dad, you've been coming on this show because there's a lot to talk about in terms of just workplace issues. And what I love about today is that before you came in, the guys from Chicago Inno were talking about their 100 coolest companies nominations, which I know is one of your favorite topics to talk about what makes the company cool. So let's get at it. Do you think it matters that a company offers these kind of perks like unlimited vacations, free candy? It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter to whom? Does it matter to the future employee who's coming and said, gee, that's really a neat place to work? Well, that's fine. But what's it worth? What's the value of it? What does it tell you about the company that you're going to be working for? That they like ping pong? That they like free candy? Come on. It just, at some point, is silly.
And at what point is that? I mean, if you're 25, you're walking into an office and there's lots going on and it's colorful seats and all of that. If that is sort of what's attracting you, what do you think the employee should actually be looking for?
I think the employee should look and say, what do these fringe benefits, if you will, mean about the company? What does it value? What are its values? Is it value just teamwork? Does it value just having fun? What does it really value? There used to be a company here in Chicago called Felpro, the most amazing company ever. It had a package of fringe benefits that really showed what its values were. It had daycare centers before anybody did for its employees. It had paid health insurance, paid sick days, paid what we call today family medical leave. It had profit sharing plans. It valued its employees as part of its family. And as a result of that, its turnover was minimal. They had waiting lists of thousands of people coming in, and they paid competitive wages. That, to me, shows who you are and what you value in your employees.
So it sounds like there's a difference between the surface kind of things that I think attract a lot of the millennials today. You're talking about things that actually require you looking into them, asking questions, because they're not always apparent on the surface.
they're absolutely not apparent on the surface. And many applicants just are afraid to really discuss what the fringe benefits are because it makes it sound like they're really not interested in the company. But I think it is. I think if you start asking those more in-depth questions, you know, what do you do when I'm sick? How many days of vacation? I represent a major name company here in Chicago who does not have a specific number of sick days. We argued for years, literally, over whether or not that made sense. I told them from a legal viewpoint, it made no sense whatsoever. But they insisted on it because it was part of their value system. 20 years later, they still don't have a formal number of sick days. And recently we discussed that. And they said, you know what? We manage it because we think it's important that employees feel that they can take off a sick day. And we trust our employees.
And do you feel the same way about vacation days?
Vacation days are exactly the same thing. How you set up vacations, how many days, it becomes a matter of trust. It becomes a matter of whether or not the employer and the employee have a trust relationship. Is it harder to manage? Absolutely. Is it, in this day and age, a very important thing? Yes.
And so what about pay? I mean, there was a great article that came out in the New York Times yesterday that talked about people, the need for people to really feel that they're valued at their job, that they enjoy what they're doing. And sometimes it doesn't have a whole lot to do with whether or not they're being paid a lot to do it, that sometimes that means more. Do you agree with that?
Well, the question is, fringe benefits are a cost, and they should be included in what you consider your pay to be. So you have to look at what the cost and value of that is. But the reality is, I think the good companies, they're having all the great benefits. They can afford to pay competitive wages.
That's so interesting. I don't think that people factor in that those fringe benefits. They're really, for the most part, just looking at what the dollar amount is being offered.
And that's a very, very unimportant part of the total equation.
And do you think this is any different today because millennials don't look that far down the road? So for them, thinking about long-term benefits may seem silly when they may only think they're staying at a job for 5 years. That would be a long time for a millennial.
For most of them, maybe a year is a long time. But the reality is, even in that year, if they get sick, how are they going to be treated? If they get injured, how are they going to be treated? That's a short-term issue as well. And I think that if a company doesn't have a plan in place for that and doesn't try to sell it, it raises a question as to what its values really are.
And the ping pong tables, the massages.
I don't know how you eat off of a ping pong table.
I mean, some of these guys are writing in and saying, we have ping pong tournaments all day long. Yeah. And you just have to ask, like, and the work is getting done by whom?
And how.
And how, right? So as we wind up, what is the one question you would recommend if you're a young person, you know, 20-something, 30-something, walking in, and, yeah, they see all the exciting, colorful stuff. What is the one question you think they need to ask in the interview?
I would like to know the package of fringe benefits, the total package.
And listen for the answers that suggest what?
Suggest how they treat people, how they value people, what is really important to them.
Look, it's Arthur Mutian. He always has an opinion about something. I've just been the beneficiary of it myself, and now I'm happy to bring it to you. Arthur Mutian, Dad, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be back and finish up the show after this short break.